You're listening to the Humankind Well-Being Forum from humanmedia.org.
The extent to which people are socially integrated, that is, have a large network of friends and family with whom they maintain regular contact, participate in community activities, participate in religious organizations, and things like that, have a lot of activities and aspects of their lives that involve maintaining contact with other people. Those kinds of people who are socially integrated, with a really crude measure, live longer, and people that are socially isolated tend to die much sooner.
And why do you think that is? Why does social isolation tend to cause people to die earlier than they otherwise might?
There are a number of potential explanations, all of which are the focus of ongoing investigation. I think people pursue the possibility, for example, that social connections may help to moderate stress. And so the extent to which people have a lot of different kinds of people with whom they have contact, so friends and family, people that share a religious affiliation, people that share a specific interest, these different kinds of social contacts may help to people to regulate their own emotional stress. And that means that they are putting less strain on their biology and maintaining good health into later life. Other explanations include people are more likely to maintain good health behaviors, not smoke, not drink, exercise. If they have lower levels of social stress and are able to maintain good relationships and have people helping them to adopt good behaviors in their daily lives.
If your mother's coming for visit, you're probably not going to smoke as much that day.
Yeah, or if you have a lot of friends with whom you maintain contact and they are just as exposed to information about the health effects of smoking, you've got more and more people telling you don't smoke, don't smoke, don't drink, and so on. If you're living alone, you may not have that kind of input. So people look at health behaviors as one reason that social integration may be linked to better health and longer life. Other people look at just psychological processes of stress, interpretations of events that happen to you, and the extent to which you feel that you are faced with demands that you have difficulty meeting. And that takes a physiological toll on the body that can produce poorer health and shorter life as well.
Is there some aspect of the empathy that one often gets from social interaction that may actually be physically or even medically beneficial?
It still begs the question of what is it about a social relationship that can improve your health? So merely having friends clearly has a benefit, but it's what is it about having friends that has a benefit? Because not all social relationships are positive, and certainly not all familial relationships are positive. There can be a lot of negative interactions with friends and with family. So people have tried to focus in on what features of a social relationship really have a connection with health. And this is where there's an interesting link with cancer. And there's evidence to suggest that being able to interact with people that understand the disease that you have, so for a cancer patient, someone else with the same kind of cancer, or more broadly, someone that has experienced the same kind of thing that you've experienced, say you've been laid off from a job, or your marriage has dissolved, being able to talk to somebody that has gone through the same experience and can help you to know what it means and evaluate it and help by saying things like, you'll get through this, or I experience the same kinds of things, or what have you, helping you to appraise the event or the disease, whatever it is, in a more positive light, people that have access to that kind of appraisal support absolutely do better. Other kinds of social support are less important, like whether or not you have a friend that can, if you've broken your leg, whether or not you have a friend that can take you shopping or something like that. Those things are helpful, but they don't seem to be as important for the link between social support and health outcomes.
And that kind of social support people could get actually in formal support groups, which are available through many hospitals and community organizations. That kind of formal community where people would sit in a circle and share and connect with each other.
That's exactly right. And the more the support group is organized around the specific challenge that an individual is facing, for example, a group of breast cancer patients, the more the benefit. Mm-hmm. So the more you're able to interact with similarly situated people, the greater the benefit.
And when you say that through this kind of beneficial social support, people can actually do better, what does it mean in that case to do better?
There are a number of different ways in which you can measure that. So merely asking people how they feel, for example, people who are able to participate in social support groups like that report less depression, less anxiety. They are doing better psychologically. But people, because of increasing interest in sort of mind-body relationships, people are also measuring physical evidence of stress, for example. So there's a hormone in the body, cortisol, which I think is becoming more and more familiar to people, which tends to be elevated, tends to be higher in people that are experiencing psychological stress. And you can measure cortisol in the blood, although there are new techniques that allow you to measure cortisol in people's saliva, which makes it a lot easier to access. And what you can show is that people that get this kind of appraisal support through participating in support groups have lower levels of stress hormones. There are other studies that look at physical attributes of tumors in cancer patients, for example, and tumors behave differently. They look like they're behaving less aggressively in people that have social support than in people that don't.
So that's huge. You're saying an actual cancer tumor, malignant tumor, may behave less aggressively for people who attend support groups.
I'll give you the exact measure. It's actually pretty stunning. There's a colleague here at the University of Wisconsin, actually, that looked at cancer. It was gynecologic cancer in women with late-stage cancer. This is pretty aggressive cancer, and they're pretty far into it. And the tumor is not an inert organism. Not only is it growing, but it's also producing hormones that are very much like the hormones that our own bodies produce. And so you can measure the kinds of hormones that a tumor is producing. There's a particular protein that has to do with inflammation that I'm interested in measuring, and others have been interested because it's linked to psychological adjustment. And the tumor produces this particular protein. It's called interleukin 6. So our own immune cells produce it. To some degree, our livers produce it. Body fat produces it. It's a hormone that has a lot of functions in the blood, including inflammation. But interestingly enough, tumors also produce IL-6. And what you can show is that in women with gynecologic cancer, if you take a sample of the fluid right around the tumor, which is going to be filled with proteins and hormones that the tumor itself is producing, women that report higher quality social relationships have lower levels of tumor-derived interleukin 6 than women who report lower levels of social support. If we're considering the quality of life of a cancer patient, I don't think there's any question that social support can help quality of life. It'll help psychological adjustment. It will moderate levels of psychological distress. There's a whole literature on pain and psychological characteristics like a sense of control and stress. And there's good evidence to suggest that people can moderate their own the physical discomfort that they feel with pain just as a function of psychological adjustment. And since pain is a major feature of cancer, that can make people more comfortable and make their lives better. So yeah, there are a lot of ways in which quality of life can be improved, even if the course of the disease is not really altered. With cancer, there's often the experience that people that have cancer are terribly afraid of placing a burden on family and friends. And therefore, they become reluctant to discuss their concerns about the disease or concerns about dying, financial concerns, anything having to do with the disease. They don't want to put that kind of a burden on family and friends. And I think it's fairly clear that they feel more comfortable talking to people that have cancer or have had cancer, because these are all things, and I think it's part of the benefit is discovering that others have had similar kinds of of feelings of not wanting to be a burden, and it can be tremendously comforting to find people, to find that they're not alone in having those kinds of concerns, and then to have a group that they do feel comfortable talking to. So I think that's, you know, we're talking about on average. I mean, I would imagine there are certainly instances where people find support from others that are not in a similar situation. But to the extent that what really helps is sort of a greater clarity in understanding what the disease means and what they can expect, you really need someone that's been there before to give you that kind of information. There are other studies that don't involve cancer that show that people get out once if they're going into surgery, if they are postoperatively roomed with someone that has been through the same surgery, they get out faster than people that are roomed with someone who had a different surgery.
Wow!
Because they get to compare notes and they feel that, you know, they're able to get a certain clarity of understanding of what just happened and what's likely to happen, and a certain camaraderie which isn't possible with people that it didn't happen to.
Have you ruled out that it could simply be a case of, if you stay one more day, this hospital food will kill you?
You cannot possibly rule that out completely.
Okay. And what do you think is the magic of interaction between people who are in the same boat and going through the same experience? What psychologically is so helpful to people about that?
Yeah, well, there's an older literature, an interesting set of studies by, I know of one researcher in particular, but I'm sure it's been done by others too, which it really has to do with what happens to us when we are faced with a challenge that we find distressing. And essentially, it's kind of a misery loves company kind of phenomenon, that when we are distressed, and that's certainly the case in people that have been diagnosed with cancer and they're undergoing cancer treatment, it changes so much of the way people move through their lives. We want to be with other people that are in a similar situation, and it's that psychological distress increases the desire for affiliation. And we know through very careful studies that it's not just a desire for affiliation. It's a desire for affiliation with people in a similar situation. Same kind of thing, I think, soldiers returning from war. It's really difficult for them to connect with people that have not been through a war, and that's why they stay so connected to their buddies after they return home, because their buddies have been through exactly what they've been through. They understand the experience. And when you're in the middle of a very stressful experience, we seek out others that are in the same experience. And it looks like the reason for that is this kind of cognitive clarity, this appraisal support to help us understand what this means. What is it that I'm going through? What is it that it means? And if you are with other people that are struggling with the same kinds of questions, it helps you, I mean, through interactions with them and just seeing how they manage it, it helps you to come to some kind of understanding about what this means for you and how you're going to deal with it, that being with people that are not in the same situation just doesn't afford.
Is there anything you'd like to add about the role of social relationships for people who are dealing with cancer?
The danger is the sort of blame the victim mentality that if social relationships are so important in cancer and there are people that are isolated, then it's their own fault for not being able to get better. And I think individuals have to find ways of coping that are comfortable for them. And with these kinds of studies, we are always talking about the average person.
Right.
But, you know, people are people. And to the extent that they have some, at least even one person that they can talk to about their disease, about the treatment issues that may be coming up for them, they will be able to derive a benefit from it. It doesn't have to be in a group setting. It just has to be a place they can go or a person they can talk to try to moderate or, you know, get information about their disease and ask questions and moderate their own thoughts about what cancer means and what treatment means.
You've been listening to the Humankind Well-Being Forum. I'm David Freudberg. For more information and to learn about Walking Through the Storm, our radio documentary project for cancer survivors, please go to humanmedia.com. www.thesocialsupportnetwork.org. Thank you for listening.